Hello and welcome to the Ian's Health Podcast with me, Ian Entwistle. It's been a little while since the last podcast, so I'd just like to apologise for that absence. There's been a lot going on here at Ian's Health, but we're back today with something for you. And I'm joined by a previous regular, James Walker, personal trainer. So if you've listened to the podcast before, you'll be familiar with James. And also, I'd like to introduce new guy, Joe Robinson. Joe's a personal trainer in Leeds, and Joe, with James, makes up the partnership of Sustain Nutrition. So that's something you're going to want to check out. There's details of their social media contact at the end of the podcast, so listen out for that. And what we'll be discussing today is we're going to be looking at why diets fail, so the issues people have with diets and why they come stuck with them. We'll also go off topic and we're going to be discussing things like some exercise issues such as mobility and certain things that are the best things to do for you in the gym. We'll also tap into some listeners' questions, so we'll be answering some questions that we received via the social media and such like. So listen out for that, and I would obviously like to thank you very much for listening and joining us here. We're very grateful, and also apologise as usual. The language may get a little bit offensive to some from James this week, so sorry about that, but hopefully that'll not be too bad. And of course, remember, these are very much our own views and opinions. Okay, so we've got James, who you know from previous podcasts.
Bonjour.
And we have Joe.
Hello.
So you both set up the Sustain Nutrition, so we're going to talk about that in a second as well. But we've obviously been out busy doing other things. That's why we've been absent from the podcast scene for a couple of months or whatever it's been. But
too long, Ian.
Yeah, we're back now, and we want to discuss. What are we going to discuss, James?
Why diets fail, or why people fail in diets, or the diet industry, why it fails us.
Okay, so we've had a few questions on this as well, and we're going to answer those questions, and we're going to look at this specifically because it's quite a big thing. Because diet might be amazing, but absolutely no use whatsoever if you can't stick to it. Yeah.
Yes. Thank consistency you. Is key.
Consistency is key. Okay, so what's
consistency
the
issue? Consistency killed the fat.
Okay. I like that.
Hashtag it.
Yeah. I'm sure we'll get a following. We'll have two listeners. So what's the deal then? Why do people, if diets fail, why do people engage in them in the first place?
It's probably not the diet itself failing, but it's more the adherence to the diet. So nutritional knowledge now has moved on substantially from where it was kind of 10, 20 years ago. People are accepting more now that saturated fat isn't going to kill them as soon as they look at it. And it's from there, it's up to people to try to follow the guidelines better. And it's almost that the knowledge now is out there and being put forward and more readily accepted, but people are still fat.
So what we've got, we're in a situation where the like you just said, Joe, the knowledge is up there. I mean, we know more than we've ever have done about nutrition, about exercise, about all these things, and yet we've got more people being obese, more people overweight, and in a worse state of health than we ever have. So
yeah, undoubtedly.
So what is that? Why is that? Do we know? So it's, what are they doing? Are they not? So we've got this information. So is the information wrong? Or are we just not adhering to it? Or is there a third factor?
There's probably the confusion factor, isn't there? That the knowledge is out there, but there's so many different opinions. And because people profess opinions so vividly, so people will say, you know, don't eat any carbs, or, you know, you can eat as many carbs as you see fit as long as it fits your macros, et cetera, et cetera. That because people profess these opinions so religiously, that it's then people buy into them quite strongly rather than having a more balanced approach and that thinking that different scenarios and different situations will apply.
Yeah, because if someone professes an idea kind of confidently enough, people tend to believe it, don't we? We see quite a lot of that in the personal training industry, don't we?
Yeah, exactly. So people then get confused and they're not sure in which direction to go. So then rather than taking a balanced approach, they'll just stick to one plan, or they won't stick to one plan. They'll do one plan for a month and then something for something else. There's no consistency in their approach, no structure to it.
So it's probably as well, I mean, I think the other thing is it's having the confidence in the approach. In other words, if you were to tell someone, I think if you do X, Y, and Z, you will be guaranteed for this to happen. I think probably people would do, wouldn't they? But as we know, we can't really, it can't be put in a straightforward way, is that, can it?
Yeah, but he's looking at long-term goals as well, because anything, or most systems are going to work for short-term. If I put someone on, you know, eating 3 grapes for the breakfast and then 2 normal meals a day for a month, then they're going to lose weight. Technically, it's not going to be good weight. It's going to be a lot of water. It's going to be a lot of muscle, but they're still going to lose weight on the scales. And that system is then going to be deemed as working. You can, you know, you can lose 14 pounds on this great breakfast system. But we, everyone knows it's not sensible. It's not sustainable. It's just bullshit. You know what I mean? Because you're not going to learn anything. You can't live on eating 3 grapes a day for your breakfast. Not obviously, I'm not peddling this diet, but if you want to buy it, just email me. I'll tell you all the secrets, what grapes to eat. So yeah, he's getting a system that is going to last you for your lifetime, as opposed to, right, I'm going to do this for 30 days and for some reason I'm going to be magically reset once I've lost 14 pounds. You're not, because you're still going to have all your shitty habits of eating rich tea biscuit sandwiches.
Of course. So what, all right then, so we're looking at why they fail. So why do they fail then?
I think the first part of that, you know, as James just said, it's unrealistic expectations that people see these things saying, you know, get shredded in 4 weeks, drop 10% body fat in 4 weeks. And you need to kind of get that out of your head instantly before you start, that it has to be a lifestyle change. If, you know, people yo-yo diet, it's not Lane Norton says, we haven't got a fat loss problem, we've got a fat maintenance problem, or we haven't got a weight loss problem, we've got a weight maintenance problem. Everyone's able to lose weight, but people can't hold on to their progress because they use these radical methods that don't last. They're unable to hold their position. So they do something for a month and then go back to exactly the way they were before because they think, you know, I've got down to my goal weight. Well, you've got there through an unsustainable method.
Yeah, do you not think, though, that I think one of the things that I would put forward is the world in which we're living in now is so geared up against trying to maintain a normal weight, shape, whatever. In other words, the opportunities to do the wrong thing are so out there, and it's you know, constantly. In other words, obviously, if this stuff wasn't there, if the only things on the shelves of the supermarkets was your meat, veg, and water, and
else. Everyone wants everything straight away in an easy way, and, you know, almost kind of yesterday. So the same thing with like foods and stuff like that. Everything comes down to convenience. You speak to people, and they'll be like, Connor, can I use a shake twice a day for my food because it's convenient? It's like, well, you know, getting in great shape and being healthy is not convenient.
And do you think that's why these more commercially made up, these commercially advertised and publicised diets, you know, what, I don't know, like Weight Watchers or Slim Faster, all these kind of things, do you think that's why they are commercially successful? Because they give someone a specific instruction to eat, you know, whatever, eat my product, eat this thing, eat this shake, or whatever it is at this time, and that's why people do it. Do you think the problem is with people?
Yeah, definitely. It's like,
see, as in the people do it. You
people
know?
Want an easy way. So if you're, you know, kind of right, you have so many points a day, that's something that people feel they can stick to, even though it's going to be garbage. Mm. You know, they're going to probably spend all those points on less than optimum food choices.
Yeah, it kind of spells it out for them, doesn't it? Without them having an understanding of the success of it or why it would be successful.
I think the word diet itself, people tend to take it as it's going to be a short term. You know, a diet is something you do for a set period of time rather than your diet being the food that you eat. So that then, you know, oh, well, I'll just stick to this method, or I'll use these points for so long until I get to where I want to do. They don't really think about what happens afterwards.
Yeah, and I think that's where we discussed it in the past, James. I think that's where the issue with things like calories and like you said, doing things on a temporary basis. In other words, people seem to think, if I do this drastic thing, whatever it is, I don't know, your 3 grapes a day diet or something.
3 grapes a day.
If you do something drastic like this, get down to the preferred weight or shape or whatever they think they're trying to go for, and then maintain it by eating healthily.
But that's it, yeah. But then why don't you just fucking eat healthily from the get-go?
Well, yeah, and then the rest looks after itself.
Exactly.
You know, you're pushing it up and doing it, mate.
Because that's slower, isn't it? That's why people don't want to do it, because it's not going to give them that instant drop. You know, it's always hard when you've got a client who's losing a pound, 2 pounds a week, and they come in and say, oh, my friends at work have all lost this weight, or they, you know, again, they hear about through the media or whoever's pushing whatever product at a certain time, and it's, people want the instant result, don't they? So you're always going to go towards that.
what other reasons? Why else would they fail then? What do you think? So you think unrealistic expectations is your first point to that. Yeah. What else do we say?
Following that, then probably consistency of whatever method you choose. So if you, regardless of which method you choose, whether you choose a radical method or you choose a more moderate method, it's doing it consistently. People tend to, things like the 5-2 diet have probably pushed people towards, well, you know, you can have that treat. Things like Slimming World, you can have so many sins a day. You know, I remember seeing it before. It's you can have 6 celebrations per day as your treat. Now, I don't know anybody who's bought a box of celebrations and eaten them in batches of 6. You know, it's people are, I've never, ever done it. You know, it's the thing of if you let people continue with these bad habits, the brutal thing is, you know, you're not a dog. You don't need to treat yourself every day. You've done something good. You know, then you're not going to break any bad habits. If you think that having some bad food at the end of the day is going to cheer you up and you continue to do that on your diet, then you're still working with those bad habits, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, you just made that point quite a good point there, Joe. I think you've made it as well in the past, James. The food as a reward thing.
Yeah,
we do that with dogs, don't we?
You know, you get like a client or you get someone who's wanting to start losing fat loss and you give them like a nutritional plan. The first thing is, right, when can I have a cheat meal? Well, you just had fucking 6 years of cheat meals. That's why you come to me.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's something that, but I think it's a mentality, isn't it? And if there's lots and lots of money poured into making, into selling this stuff, which doesn't help people at all. You know, commercially available food products. There is so much money put into that. And they rely heavily on the idea of you can still be healthy and have our products. In other words,
you can find the easiest way. So it's people come in, they want the contrast, isn't it? If they want these dramatic results of 10% body fat drops in a month, but through the easiest possible method.
Yeah. You can be bad on the weekend, or this, I don't know, can of Coke or something is only this many calories, so therefore if you burn off that many calories, you know.
Yeah, you can work into your nutrition. Yeah.
Exactly, as part of a balanced, healthy diet. Well, I don't know where that fits into
I was like, when people talk about moderation, you think, do we look like a society that has adopted moderation well? We're like the fattest women in Europe and, you know, everybody, whatever the percentages are of people being obese or overweight now and childhood diabetes, that's obviously not a country that's got moderation down to a T. So there has to be something before moderation. You know, learning to go without, I think, is probably the first thing. Taking away those treats, I just find that it's flexible dieting is fine if you can do it, but how many people can do it successfully?
Yeah, and that is the thing, I think, and that's where sometimes that kind of almost a complete abstinence from anything that's kind of, you know, slightly suspect on the food front, it can be advisable, because like you've just said, some people can't manage the one biscuit, because I mean, you know, one biscuit is not going to bring the diet down, but then how easy is that to do? I don't know.
Not for most people. Like I say, people want, like Joe said, it's just kind of like the easiest way possible, the most painless. It's not. It is, you know, you have to get up, you have to cook your breakfast, you have to prep your food for the day after, you have to go to the gym, you have to train hard. You know, you can't just eat something out of a pack, you know, drink a shake and then do a Zumba class.
Yeah.
Not going to work.
Not for most people.
Zumba's upset, Joe. Hang on, we're sharing a mic.
Not for most people.
I think you can be flexible once you've got to the point you want to be, because then you can gain 2 pounds and then you can easily lose that 2 pounds. When you are 2 or 3 stone away from where you want to be, or even a stone, you can't do that because you haven't figured out the right way to be successful yet. You know, and it's when people say, oh, well, what do you eat? It's like, well, I'm not going to tell you what I eat because I can adapt my diet easier than you can. You know, I can cut things out easier than you can. So
yeah, it's building that habit up. And of course, we've said it before, even if it's different for different people, but it's different for the same people at different points in their state of health, isn't it? So in other words, a healthier, optimized individual is going to be in a better position for utilizing calories and maintaining that maintaining that homeostasis, as it were, the level of health that they're at. In other words, little slip ups when you're in a good state is not gonna bring the house down, is it?
You look at the guys, you know, people like us, you know, who are around 10% body fat.
Steady on, Joe.
I gave you a rather saucy look as I said that. Guys who are, you know, men who are young, well-ish, me primarily me, and you know, who are strong and fit, then they're going to be able to, they're going to need more energy. Yeah, mostly gingers as well. They've got really high metabolisms. Then they're going to be able to get away with eating more than, you know, your 40-year-old Marjorie, who has never lifted weights before and never done any high-intensity work before.
If you're trying to create an image of what this looks like, I'm sure you've probably seen an image of me and James before.
There's a whole lot of man going on this land. There's a whole lot of man.
But if you're wondering about Joe, if you've not kind of gleaned it from his voice yet, then he is something akin to a slightly larger Prince Harry.
Slightly. Would that be fair? Not as attractive.
Would that be a fair reflection?
Yeah. Yes, he is. And he is single.
Right.
But that is for a reason.
Okay. What else did we have on the why they fail? So... Feels like quite a negative negative hypocrisy. We've not been handing out much.
They're kind of designed to fail. So, you know, you go on either something that's too strict, so it's too much of a drastic change for you, so you're completely changing around your eating habits. So you're bound to fluff that. Or, like I say, it's not maintainable, so you're not going to eat Weight Watchers products for the rest of your life. Or, you know, you're not going to eat 1,000 calories for the rest of your life. You're not going to drink 2 shakes a day for the rest of your life. So then you go back to how you were eating. So if you're eating prepackaged foods, you've not learned anything about how to cook or what to cook or what to eat. You know, if you're drinking shakes, again, same thing, you don't learn anything about portion sizes or what foods you should be eating. So then you gain the weight back and then you go, oh, fuck, I've got fat again, or fatter, sorry. What can I do? What did I do last time? Oh, I drank shakes, right? I'll go back to doing that. Or I did Weight Watchers, I went back to doing that. And then so the cycle continues. It just doesn't make any sense.
So part of the change in the way you eat is to develop and maintain a healthy, you know, way of being for long term.
I think finding somebody who's unbiased, you know, if you don't know the right things to eat yourself, then you need to find somebody who hasn't got a vested interest in certain products or... Well, obviously we have our own system, but it's not based upon selling an individual product that's promising miracle results. I think you need to take a step back and think long term about these things, and over the course of, say, a year, you know, which is what it's going to take most people to lose even a significant amount of weight or even a small amount of weight, and to be able to maintain these things, then that's kind of the first port of call, is to work out where your weaknesses are. If your weakness is you can't stick to something, you know, so you can't stick to it, they need to be accountable to somebody. If you don't know, then you need to find out from a more knowledgeable source than yourself.
Always keep learning, man. Any more before we move on to some questions, James?
I think we've slated the diet industry quite enough.
Okay, so and why they failed. So we know what the deal is. You can listen to other podcasts in what we think to do is you set up the situation, you remove anything that's going to be bad from your diet, so from your house, you know, anywhere, so it's not available to get, and you stick to the real stuff.
Yeah, just be realistic. If you've been slowly gaining weight for the last 6 years, don't expect to change your body in 6 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, but that's not as sexy as saying, again, drink these shakes, take these pills, and in 6 weeks' time, you'll have a six-pack. You know, saying, well, you're going to have to watch what you eat. You know, you're going to have to not socialize as much. You're not going to be able to have as many treats. You're going to have to exercise hard, you know, 3-4 times a week. You're going to have to do all this. It's going to take you a good year to shift most of this weight.
Yeah.
That's not as sexy as sell.
And as well, I mean, people have to decide what they want, don't they? Because, you know, if you, for what you want, do you want to do what is necessary? And if, you know, you might decide that you don't, and that's your choice. You know?
But there's no magic pill, there's no quick fix.
Do you want to compete on the stage?
Nah.
Then that requires a certain amount of sacrifice. Do you want to you know, just fit into a certain item of clothing? I don't know. You know, you have to decide what you want, and then determine, is that achievable? You know, can you do that and still, you know, do the things you want to do?
I think keeping that at the forefront of your mind with every decision you make is quite important. So, you know, it comes down to sometimes if you're in a shop or something, it has to be, it's either this item of food or the end result I want, whether that be a six-pack fitting to the dress, whatever it may be. You can't have both. You know, it's the accumulation of small efforts is what makes success. Like, you might be able to get away with one chocolate bar, but if that's a habit you're doing every day, every week, then you're not going to be successful ultimately. And you have to, it has to be as cut and dry as that. If it's it's A or B, it's black or white, it's chocolate or six pack,
yeah,
whatever your vice may be. And you have to, I think when people just are on autopilot or they think they can get away with these things, that's when they have the issues.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's probably why the habits and the lifestyle has to be set up. That's why it's so important, isn't it? Because I think people will, no matter how well-conditioned and able someone is, I think there's always going to be a slip-up, isn't there? There's always a difficult point. I mean, we all know this. There's always going to be a difficult point. And therefore, it's having that habit and setup in place to minimise that and minimise the chances of that happening.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where kind of having the support network is going to help people. So that attitude of, I'll start again on Monday, you know, if it's Tuesday morning and you've slipped up, then you can take quite a few steps back over the next 6 days. Yeah. So I think it's, again, if you can just always have that reset and to start again, you know, with where people do almost the, you know, it was the 7-stage cycle where people relapse. You know, it's part of, yeah, of dieting, is you aren't going to be strict for the rest, yeah, of your life. You just have to accept that you, yeah, will fall off some time and just
and not in
again.
This environment we're in. I mean, it's nigh on impossible, isn't it? I think.
Yeah, I think it's still that thing where you still have to live your life. And I'd always say to people, you know, I mean, never miss like a social engagement or something like that because you're on a, I'll do like air commas, a diet. You know what I mean? But you need to learn how to live your life properly. And, you know, these slip-ups are going to happen. You know, you're going to want to have a small sherry at Christmas and champagne at a wedding. You know, I'd never say, oh, I'm just going to have water because I'm on a diet. But then it's getting everything together, like Joe said earlier. You know, get to that point where you're kind of happy with how you are, and then you can start messing around with your diet. Like, you see all these pictures on Instagram of guys eating, you know, buckets full of ice cream and Pop-Tarts, and it's all this flexible dieting. Where if it fits your macros and stuff like that, but that's because they're already, you know, where they want to be. And like we said before, it's easy for them to just adjust their diet. They've got like good eating habits, good training habits. They're already instilled in them. They're not, you know, 30% body fat guys who are already in horrific shape.
Yeah, you don't see the other 95% of their meals where it's everything strict, everything's measured, everything's managed and on point at the right times in their training. They're just showing you, again, it comes down to showing people what they want to see, that's going to garner more views and more likes and more comments and essentially make them more money by showing them eating two tubs of Ben & Jerry's after a workout. It's not actually the rest of their life, you know, it's social media.
Yeah, it's that idea of like, oh, I can eat this pizza and I've still got a six pack. It's like, well, yeah, but most people can't. You know, if you've got a metabolism like a little mouse on a wheel, then yeah, you could probably get away with that. But most people don't have that, and they don't have those excellent eating habits where they can pull it back.
Yeah, it's as a general rule, I would avoid most of social media for any advice, personally.
Except for sustain.
If I sound particularly grumpy about that, yeah. All right.
We don't have six packs.
Question time. What have we got? I should also say as well a bit of a nod to Maggie, who said one of our listeners, Maggie the Crane Pearson, one of our listeners who said to tell James not to swear so much. So apologies to Maggie there.
I've hardly said anything.
You know, maybe I'll edit it all out. We'll see.
She loves it.
Okay, what have we got? First question.
Do you want to do your question first?
Mike, why did I have a question?
Yeah, you had a question. Get your shit together.
We had a tweet from Rachel, who asked us where we'd been. So Rachel was interested in, she said it's a bit confusing with what she hears about fructose. So, you know, she might hear that it's, you know, it's bad and such like, and we hear this, but then this is the kind of sugar that we find in fruit. So for those that don't know it, fructose is a sugar, and it's predominantly, you get fructose in fruit. So she was wondering what the issue was with fructose. Is it bad or good? It's a bit confusing. So I'm going to throw that out. We can come back to me as well if we want.
Pressure's on.
But that's okay. So what do you think? Well, Joe's got the mic. What do you think, Joe?
So it's distinguishing first between the fructose that you're talking about, whether that be high fructose corn syrup based products or fructose in fruit.
So what you're basically saying there, Joe, is that we have... We hear fructose, and it's
like a blanket term.
Exactly, yeah. And it's just a name for a setup of this sugar, this particular sugar, and it's very sweet. So we see that found in fruit, and we see it in this high fructose corn syrup, what you've just mentioned there. Now, high fructose corn syrup has got a lot of bad press, and people are, because this stuff is in so many products, particularly in America. They put it to sweeten lots of things, from goodies to bread to all sorts of stuff. So
So whilst they're still under the same term, they both obviously contain fructose.
Yep. It's a different thing, isn't
it? The way this affects your body is poles apart. So when you've got a heavily processed product like high fructose corn syrup, that's going to affect your body in a totally different way to the fructose in fruit, just because of the way that the chemicals have, you know, with the way that the nutrients and whatnot have been altered and how your body then deals with it.
And we can talk about that too. There's probably another podcast in that in how fructose affects someone. What I would probably do is actually, if someone was more interested in, is particularly interested in that, there's quite a good book by a doctor called Robert Lustig called Fat Chance, and he details actually how your body handles fructose and he talks about sugar. I think it might be called Fat Chance, The Bitter Truth, I think, about sugar. Or he details sugar. So that's something worthwhile reading. But so what do we think then? So we get this fructose, which is an issue in this high fructose corn syrup, which is abundant in all sorts of things.
Garbage.
What about fruit then?
Fruit is a completely different animal. So fruit is sweet for a reason. That reason is it's got sugar in it, and that sugar is in the form of fructose. But then when you eat fruit, it's a totally different story because you've got all the fiber, etc., everything else that comes with it, that it's going to slow down that absorption. And it's going to make it a lot easier for your body to handle, as opposed to if you drank a pint of orange juice, which would be easy to drink, but it's going to contain like five oranges. No one's going to sit and eat five oranges.
Exactly, that's a good point.
You're crazy.
It's completely different in how it's packaged up, isn't it? Is what you're saying there, James. So oranges, to eat the orange, to eat the apple, to eat the fruit, yes. Perhaps having the fruit juice a little bit different, and that's probably where some people might get. It's a bit less straightforward, isn't it? If we're going to say fruit juice is a bit funny, because how wrong is fruit juice? You know, and this is the thing. So go on, explain that, James.
Yeah, well,
between the fruit and the fruit juice then?
Well, like I say, the fruit is going to take time. So if you imagine that you take an orange, you peel it, and you have to shove it through a tennis racket. That's going to take some time, and it's going to take all the fiber, all the pulp and everything. That's like your digestion. So imagine the other side of the tennis racket. I don't know where I'm coming up with this. It's like going into your bloodstream. Whereas if you pour a pint of orange juice, that's going to go straight through and get straight into your bloodstream, spike your blood sugar up, and then it's going to cause you all sorts of issues.
So in other words, what you've basically got with the fruit juice is you've got sugar and the water and not a great deal of anything else. Whereas with the orange, you know, the solid orange, you've got the you know, lots of the, like say, the fibre, you're not having half the volume either, are you?
No, of course, like I said, you know, you're going to struggle to sit down and eat five oranges or 10 apples or something like that, whereas drinking them it's easy.
Yeah, so you get in the fruit juice, you're getting the sugar, and you're missing out on a lot of the good stuff that would come with the fruit.
Yeah, so everything's going into your system though twice as fast, so your body doesn't have the ability to use it. If there's not the demand for that energy reserve that you're putting in, then your body's going to have to store it. If it goes in slower, then your body's going to be able to utilize that for fuel.
Yeah, and it's an easy way of just getting a load of volume in, which is unnecessary.
There's
isn't
no
it?
Satiety from, you know, in comparison from the drink.
Good use of that word.
Thank you.
Okay, so hopefully that's a little bit clearer, but basically you don't really need to know the details of that. You just need to stick to the golden rule of just eat the food and don't bother with any of the processed garbage.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah?
Same.
Yeah. Food does not have a list of ingredients.
It is the ingredient.
Boom.
Don't drink your calories, eat them.
There we go. Next question.
Next question. We've got one from Maxine. And she wants to know...
She a long-time listener, first-time caller?
Yeah.
Okay.
Stop nicking my lines. She wants to know optimum training frequency for fat loss with resistance training and HIIT, high-intensity interval training. So I would say it depends.
Yeah, the standard kind of the get-out answer of how much is enough. I think it's better to set a minimum from personal preference. That's what I would do with people, rather than saying you need to do 3, 4, 5, 6 sessions.
Wants to know how many sessions she has to do of the resistance work for what's the optimum number of sessions for fat loss.
It's very broad, isn't it? But a lot of it's going to come down to how much your body can tolerate and what kind of load you can handle. You know, if you are very new to resistance training, then doing a 5-day split is going to absolutely destroy you. Whereas if you are more conditioned to these things and you're more experienced, then your body's going to be able to handle that training volume a lot better.
Is she someone who partakes in resistance work? No. Do we know this?
Yes, she does.
Right, okay. So she's
James is nodding, so I'm going to say for Maxine, yes.
Yes, she does. Yes, that is correct. Affirmative.
So she doesn't say. I mean, I think it's a very difficult
yeah,
question.
So, there's so many factors in there, kind of like, you know, Joe said, like stress levels, sleep patterns, nutritional habits. You know, there's no easy way of saying, right, if you train four times with weights, you know, four full workouts and then two HIIT sessions, you will get this result, because it's going to affect people in totally different ways, how they recover, I mean, and all sorts.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I would probably say more than that is, if you're looking for fat loss, then it's the diet that needs to be in order.
Yeah, nutrition, number one. In fact, I've just finished writing a blog that'll be coming out on this. So we kind of list of priorities for fat loss. So number one is nutrition. Second one would be resistance training. Third one would be HIIT training. And then fourth one, steady state cardio. And then fifth one, I think, was unicorn turds. The magic spells.
And sleep would be before all them, wouldn't it?
Well, sleep, yes. All right, smart ass.
No, right. So basically what we're going to say then to Maxine is that she's got to... the diet, because that's what I think, you see. I think too many people think, is this better for fat loss, or is some other type of training? So in other words, is cardio or is it weights, or what should I be doing?
Resistance training first, and I think, after nutrition, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, all of us here would always agree that resistance work is probably the most important thing you can be doing as far as exercise goes. But I think that's a small thing in comparison to organising your diet and making sure what you're eating.
You can't outrun your fork.
Yeah, I mean...
Or outlift it.
Yeah. I think
sometimes I can't lift my fork.
It's... well, the thing is, isn't it? I mean, I don't know what you guys think from personal experience. Personally, I would say how lean I am is completely dependent on my diet. If I'm someone that regularly trains anyway, then the variable...
Yeah, the variable is your nutrition.
The variable which has the biggest impact, it tends to be nutrition. And I would say, from my experience, the resistance work and the weight training I might do kind of controls my shape. And you know, whether if I'm doing really well with my legs might be bigger, or whatever. Okay, so basically what we're saying anyway is that it's quite complex, but and there's no kind of absolute bang on right thing to do, but there are ways of optimizing things.
Yeah, I think what most people think is fat loss, right? So if you think of it like a little pyramid, it's the bottom of it is going to be lots and lots of cardio, then it'll be a little bit of resistance training, and then like a little bit of nutrition, and it's the other way around.
Yeah, that's incorrect to say what you just said, isn't it? Yeah.
You know what I mean? Instead of spending... I just want to qualify that. Instead of,
if someone came in partway through there, you know.
Instead of spending 5 hours a week in the gym.
In our opinion, of course.
Yes, you'd be better served spending 5 hours prepping food.
Yeah.
You know, but then if you've got obviously that time to go to the gym, you know, if you've got 3 hours spare a week, then do resistance training. If you've got 5 hours spare a week, then do resistance training and HIIT training, or finish a bit of HIIT training at the end of your weight training session, you know.
HIIT,
so
meaning HIIT?
Yeah, high intensity interval training. So basically, pick something, go really, really hard. So some kind of full body lift or moves, you know, so like burpees, mountain climbers, you know, cleans and presses, kettlebell swings, anything, you know, sprints on a bike, sprints on a cross trainer, sprints on a treadmill, prowler pushes, anything you could do for a short interval.
So like maximum intensity.
Yeah, and then a quick bit of recovery.
Or close to maximum.
Max interval training.
Yeah. People can look that, can't they? We've discussed that in other podcasts.
Discussed it. I think we've covered that.
And what's that? Were you going to add something there, Joe?
No.
Okay, just taking the mic. Okay, so do we have any more questions?
Yeah, we got one from our Tony in Leeds. He's another ginger.
Long time listener.
Oh, he loves it. He loves his stuff. And he's asking if we think that mobility stretching is important for your kind of average gym goer. I say yes. I say move well, eat well. People don't move well because they're all fucked up from sitting in chairs too long.
Yeah. Go on, Joe, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, we've just said, you know, advising people who are looking to lose weight, that resistance work, you know, big compound movements. If you move like shit, then you shouldn't be doing squats, overhead work, various movements like that.
Joe, I thought you were going to be the one that wasn't going to swear.
Oh, sorry. Let's the facade slip there briefly. Yeah.
Very much. Sorry, Joe.
I've been hanging out with James too long.
Sorry, yeah.
We've got our haircuts are in sync as well and everything. That's really tragic. Sorry,
I'm rude. sorry, Joe. Go on. What was it? Your point is that people shouldn't, if they can't move very well, they shouldn't be doing these lifts.
They should be more cautious or more reserved with the kind of lifts they do. So you wouldn't have somebody who can't do a normal back squat or a front squat doing a 5 rep max. You know, you're going to stress your body too much. You're putting it through a range of movements that it's not comfortable with. So we'd advise.
Yeah, for anyone who doesn't know, yeah, and a 5 rep max would be doing lifting the heaviest weight you could lift for 5 reps, basically. In other words, what's the most you can lift for 5 reps?
Yeah, I'm going to say the same thing. If someone doesn't have a decent squat pattern, then please don't load it. You see people who can't perform squats, body weight, but then for some reason, yeah, you know, whoever they're training with or their trainer or whatever decides to put a bar on the back, like, that's not going to help.
Yeah, it's quite... I think... I can't remember who said it was. I think it was... was it Gray Cook, I think, the movement guy? He said, if you're doing something incorrectly, i.e. your squat, if your squat movement is incorrect, by adding weight to that and doing that, you are basically strengthening an incorrect movement.
Yeah, a dysfunction. You're building on a dysfunction, which is not good. That's why
I think I've said what he meant to say.
Yeah, it's Mike Boylan. It is a shit test. If it looks like shit, don't do it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, we've mentioned this before when we've done these podcasts, and we've advised people to do the compound lifts as opposed to the isolation lifts. So in other words, we said do things like squats, deadlifts, big lifts rather than bicep curls or whatever. And I think we mentioned it before as well that these lifts, whilst we hear them mentioned a lot, and you know, do you squat, or you know, this girl does squats or whatever, you know, we hear
how much
that.
A squat, bro.
Yeah, you know, we hear these kind of terms, but they're actually, even though they're mentioned a lot, and they are primal type basic movements, they're quite complex movements as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think if you look, you know, if you open up any fitness magazine, they will say there'll be pages and pages, months and months, weeks and weeks, you know, years and years of people saying squat, push, pull.
Yeah.
But then there's never anything mentioned about if you do it, you know, if you can't do it, you know, if you can't squat properly, then you should try a front squat or elevate your heels. There's loads of different ways you can still do these movements if you don't have the relevant mobility. But if you know, if you don't have the mobility, don't just push and push and push on with these complex movements.
Yeah, they are complex movements. And I think the thing is as well, different people have different skill levels to start off with, and they have different levels of mobility. So, you know, yeah. And anatomy, yeah, good point. So, you know, to say someone, this is, you know, when people say, oh, you can't, you know, you can squat to this depth or that depth, it's an incorrect, you know, I've considered this quite a lot because, you know, there's a lot of factors involved in getting a decent squat. And I think just to say, oh, this is what you should be able to do is a bit farcical, really. But it's the mobility will help someone.
Oh, massively. You know, and like I said, society today, or people's jobs and stuff, that's what kind of ruins a lot of people's hip mobilities. And I think it's one thing that we see a lot in the gyms is it's shoulders, hips and ankles.
Yeah.
You know, from either being sat down rounded, you know, type on a keyboard, you know, sat in your car for 2 hours a day, or, you know, or longer, going to and from work, then sat at your desk, ankle seize up, hip seize up, you try and get someone to squat and they just hinge at the hips.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So working on those kind of, obviously there are ways around it and you can do stuff. You know, to work legs. So you do have, you know, exercises like leg press and stuff like that, which will slightly get away from that. But ideally, you want to be able to perform these movements, so squats, deadlifts, pushes, pulls, correctly. So it's just working on those whilst working around them as well.
Yeah, and I think probably as well, in terms of saying about stretching, I would class stretching as something slightly different from, say, mobility work. I think that's kind of, people think, I personally would differentiate between doing a lot of stretching before a workout and doing mobility work before a workout.
Yeah, exactly. I think people see them as exactly the same thing, don't they? Because you relate things like yoga, where people do a lot of stretching and therefore have good mobility.
Yes.
But it's still important to, you know, the purpose of stretching before a workout would only be to switch off overactive tissue. So for example, if your hips are facilitated or overactive, then if you loosen your hips off, you stretch your hips off, it will then be easier for you to activate other muscles such from there. You know,
we should do a full podcast on this or something, because this is quite a complex area, this, because it's something I see quite a lot when I'm doing sports massage on people. Most people have a similar issue. Most people have real tightness in the traps from leaning forward, being on a keyboard, that kind of thing.
And old magic hands.
Yeah, and having their shoulders sort of slumped forward. Most people don't know how to activate the lats to pull the shoulders back.
And then they go into the gym, what do? You smash a load of chest and it just gets worse.
Yeah, I think, you know, and I think that it's a big thing that, so what should people do? Again, too complex a question just to give one answer, but to maintain. I mean, you want to maintain some mobility just to be able to put your socks on or whatever by the time you're 60 years old.
So I think, like I say, you start off with a bit of a mobility work, so just to get all the joints going, and then a bit of a dynamic warm up. You know, so lots of moving around, lots of leg swinging, arm swinging. And then save the static stretches for ends, so they're the kind of developmental stretches.
Actually, as well, this is quite, you made me think about this before, Joe, when you made a point. When I've just said there that you can't really give a one size fits all for as far as the mobility and such like goes. Do you guys, when you're assessing clients, you will assess them for this, won't you? You'll assess their mobility. Do you do this functional movement screen?
Yeah, we follow the FMS, which is 7 global movements that look at kind of multi-joint movements, looking at single
Greg
leg.
Cooks, isn't it? Is that Greg Cooks? Yeah.
So, and then from there, you can then build a personalised mobility or, you know, a movement plan, essentially.
So people will have different deficiencies.
Exactly.
I mean, a lot of people do tend to have similar ones, don't they? Because, like we just said, being seated in a car or an office desk, at a desk or things like that. So people do tend to have, you know, the hips are flexed for long periods of time in the day and things like this, aren't they? Because of the seated position. So they'll have issues related to that, weak glutes, such like. But you will do a screen to check what they are, and then you can put something together to address those issues.
Yes, exactly. And then it's trying to do that kind of as often as possible. You can't really do too much prehab work in regards to working on your weaknesses. And I think the reason that's quite interesting why the FMS got so popular was Gray Cook took it to an NFL team. I don't know if you heard this before. And the guys who scored less than 13 had a 70% higher chance of injury than the guys who scored more than that. And then from there, the reasoning behind people.
So it was like a good predictor for injury.
Yeah, exactly. You can imagine how much money that's worth to various NFL teams, and that kind of got it out into the mainstream society. And what he concluded was the biggest indicator of an injury is a previous injury, and after that is an asymmetry. So having one side that moves worse than another.
Yeah, so therefore, what we're going to say then really is that it's important for people to, I suppose it's maximising your potential, isn't it? And there are some people that are always going to suffer more than others with tightness and immobility. And it's trying to kind
Everyone's got their inherent levels, don't they?
Yeah.
You have people who are born more flexible, or it's a Rocabada test, isn't it, scored on a 1-9, where you can look at how naturally flexible people are.
Right. But you'll always see as well, kids are always going to always appear more flexible than
Yeah,
than
because they've not been ruined by years and years of sitting down, but like Joe was just saying there with the Rocabada and stuff, that'll show up kind of people who are hypermobile.
What's that, by the way? Just explain that
to people. It's basically kind of, looking at people who can hyperextend joints and stuff like that, so like fingers, thumbs, elbows, knees and stuff like that. And then, you know, I mean, they'll sometimes, that's being hyperflexible is just as bad as being inflexible, because you can't develop a lot of tension in your muscles. Mm. So it's going to affect how you lift.
Yeah, so
you can't win.
No, you can't. So
you've got to be Joe Average.
We're kind of answering questions by not answering questions here.
People should have a decent level of flexibility.
And you can find that out as well. Sometimes, you know, what can help is, like I said, doing the movement correctly develops good mobility, doesn't it? But you've got to be able to do the movement to some kind of standard.
Yeah, and you know, for these people who want, you know, muscle growth, if you can get a bigger range of motion, then that's going to create, you know, a better chance of growth.
And it sounds crazy as well, but if you can't do the movement well with one weight, don't add more weight.
Yeah, find an alternative. You know, I've seen so many people who can't back squat properly, but if you load them into a front squat or, you know, a goblet squat like a kettlebell squat, they're suddenly able to perform the movement. Yeah. You know, unless their goal is to build their back squat, just work with a movement that you can do. You're not going to get, you know, a massive difference in regards to the result you want, if it be fat loss or muscle gain between a front squat and a back squat. You know, you can just work with what you've got.
There are more than one way. There's many ways around the same to get to the same point, aren't there? You don't have to do the exact same movements all the time. You know, you just got to do the movements well. Good. So we've got to be mobile then. Or as mobile as we can be in order to maximise what we can do.
Last question.
Yep.
It's from Tony again. He would like to know which Ben & Jerry's flavour is optimum for the best gains, and he spelled it with a Z. And I would say,
did he put a hashtag?
No, he didn't put a hashtag, but he did spell it with
a Z.
I can't remember if it's double Z.
That's why he's not getting the gains he wants to see.
5 Zs.
That's why he's not getting the gains.
Yeah, I'd
There's
say,
your problem right there, Tony.
I would make all of them, and it'll depend on quantity over actual flavour. 5 litres minimum.
Basically, yeah. If you want
gains in diabetes,
if you want to get fat and ill, Ice cream's probably your best bet, although it is very nice.
if you melt it and drink it as well, it loads faster to get those calories in, so it won't fill you up so much.
Yeah. Hey, basically, take all messages. If you want to get fat, eat loads of ice cream.
Yeah, try to avoid the ice cream.
And we're not going to say one flavour's better than the other, just volume.
I'm not that familiar with Ben & Jerry's flavours, I've got to say. Nah. I think there's a cookie dough one, there's a brownie one,
you
and
know
there's
what?
Fish food.
Avoid it.
Get your good fats in avoid. From the peanut butter cup one.
Avoid it, that's what I say. No, I don't even dream about looking at the list of ingredients on that stuff, I tell you. It's frightening.
I remember you complaining to me once that they have 5 different types of hidden sugar in there.
Yeah, I couldn't... I've not really looked at that since and thought... What I don't know, I still don't know it. Maybe someone can tell me, but there was sugar by about 5 different names on the back of that. Fructose syrup, glucose syrup, just sugar. So I don't know what that one came. I think that's what it was. I can't remember. Someone will have to look and tell me. I might be wrong there, but yeah.
There's actually no sugar in it now.
I couldn't understand all that. So yeah, I'd avoid that stuff if you can. Well done, chaps. Thanks for that. And if they want to know more, obviously they can look at the website ianshealth.co.uk. And they can get in touch with me via the website or via Twitter. But also, you boys can get in touch with your...
Yeah, we've got our Facebook page, Sustain Nutrition. And then we have a Twitter and Instagram.
Sustain_Nutri.
That's his thing. That's what he does. And we've got plenty of videos. Yeah, and we've got the YouTube channel as well, Sustain Nutrition. So check that out. Lots of videos of me and Joe just chatting, shooting the breeze. The odd visit from the cat.
Okay, there we go. Okay, thanks for listening. And
it's always been a pleasure.
Get in touch if you need anything sorting out in this way.